pool of blood. The dust absorbed the blood, and the bloody dust blew away. Behind Harmony, the black stallion stood. Nico's shield was on his saddle. Someone must have picked it up and hung it there. Around, stepsons were beginning to gather. He saw Sink, holding the goddess's pregnant sable mare. Seeing her made his heart glad. She nickered and peered his way. He looked from the goddess to his commander and back again to her. "Shan's dead, then?" he asked her. "Turned to dust." "Dead, yes. You killed Shamshi. Brought him his death." "He'll never trouble you again," said the goddess. A promise, a pledge. And he believed her with all his heart when she smiled at him like sunrise. He turned his head to Tempest once more, and his neck hurt so much he caught his breath. When he could, he said, "And Ascalon, Commander?"
"We're free of him. You saw his corpse. I have the heart of Ascalon," Tempest said.
He showed Nico the obsidian bracelet on Ash's amputated wrist. The hand below the wrist and the entire forearm above the bracelet were hacked away. When Nico looked up again, the goddess and the sable mare were gone. But the black horse and his commander still waited. Without another word, watching him narrowly, Tempest brought him his horse. Nico took the reins and leaned against the black stallion while tremors racked him, and passed. The horse's warmth chased the cold from his limbs, and he was stronger then. He looked behind him and all around. No vast ranks of fighters still clashed upon the battle plain. No dreaming Macedonians refought Thebans for supremacy in a conflict decided long ago and far away. But there were corpses everywhere. So many piles of bodies and the smell of fresh blood upon the breeze. The corpses seem uncountable, men lying as men will when killed in battle. In mid-step or mid-cry, limbs askew or detached. The valley was dotted with fighters lying in clusters or sitting still, while others bent over them with spear or sword to make an end to suffering where they could. From the look of the battlefield, many hours of danger and dying remained. Hours of searching for the wounded and dispatching the nearly dead and trying not to get killed while dispensing mercy. How many dead here? Hundreds. A reasonable number, considering the odds. The forces arrayed on this battle plain. He felt as if he'd killed that many personally. But there is no good number, no number low enough when counting up the dead. When the dead are your dead, no casualty is reasonable. "How many of ours, dead or wounded?" he called softly to Tempest, who was over by the truss, hunkered down beside his horse, feeling its legs for damage from its fall. Nico joined his commander there, his goddess-given black horse following close behind him.
"Casualties? Unclear. Ishard's out there. Crit and Stratton haven't come in yet. We'll know when they get back. Lots of Ascalon's forces piled up out there. Released to whatever hell or heaven whence the Dream Lord conscripted them," Tempest said, not looking away from the Trosis legs.
Nico crouched beside his commander.
"Riddler, is there something I can do?"
He was restless, full of questions. Who was hurt? Who was dead? On the far side of battle, he was always filled with nervous energy. There is always so much left unsaid and so many lessons to be learned.
Crit knows what to do. Rest a moment, Nico. Stay here with me.
And without looking at him, Tempest reached out and squeezed his arm.
This was as hard a battle as any man has fought, ever.
His voice rattled.
A battle that men who don't go to war will sing about for generations. It's good to have it behind us. It's good your goddess came along, added Tempest very low. Now we pull all of ours together and see what's left to us. The sun is new each day. On the other side of Meridian, and the Dreamlord and Shamshi, everything begins again. Look around. This is our valley, not theirs. We'll claim it and use it for Abarsis, for our dead when we can name them. For ourselves, and for the band, for many years to come.
And so they began anew, in the valley below the overlook where Abarsis had gone to heaven on smoke and flame. In the late afternoon light, the valley looked nothing like Chironea. No campfires gleamed from the heather-covered slopes or from the valley floor or from a hill away or the valleys behind that. Sage and white roses with golden eyes glowed softly on the hillsides. The purple haze was gone. Nico asked Tempest, "The war we won, the battle we fought. Did we fight it in Meridian?" He stood up.
The Riddler stood up, too. Both of them had taken wounds. Both were healed. Injuries gone as if they'd never been.
From this last clash with the wizard boy, Nico had no rips or tears or no ruined flesh. His body now fares better than his armor. Probing in the dusk, he rubbed his right hip and found only a scabby scratch. No cut remained where he'd sustained a body slice down hip and thigh from a berserker with an axe. He rubbed his right arm where an arrow had lodged. He found no puncture. Tempest looked at him and shook his head. Just long eyes and a flash of teeth in the deepening dark.
Trust in heaven. We'll heal. Don't question it.
So he asks only, "How could Meridian be here, Riddler?"
"Ishard says," Tempest answered him, "that this time the Chironean battle plane was in Meridian. But that Meridian was manifesting here today."
Tempest shrugged massive shoulders.
"We fought a glorious battle in a real place and time, in this valley on this day. Call it Chironea or Meridian or Sanctuary, it makes no difference. Men really died. Fates were really decided. We really triumphed over the Dreamlord and the Wizard Boy. I think I've told you before. Things I can feel and touch and see. These do I prefer."
Tempest swung up on the big tross and Nico on his new black horse. Nico could feel the sweet wind in his hair stroke his horse's muscled neck. See the day give way to spangled splendor above their heads. His commander was right. Nothing could compare to riding together through the last of the daylight on their horses as wolves called prayers to the moon. And owls began their hunt, and peepers and crickets praised this world the gods had made.
Men are fools who forget what really matters while time goes by.
They rode over to watch the sacred band of stepsons and the third commando putting their casualties and walking wounded in wagons. The sunset was raying out like Enlil's crown, and the clouds blazed pink and blue and gold. They stayed there, together, unspeaking, until dusk covered the heather and the men and the horses. Then Nico asked, "Are you content, Commander?" Tempest looked at him sidelong and said, "Nico, this was a test we all had to pass, not just you. Character is destiny. The gods fought at our sides, and something very evil of very long standing has been vanquished. Perhaps the fates are no longer angry. Perhaps even Sanctuary can come aright now that this is done." "That hellhole?" Nico grinned at the thought. "If it came aright, it wouldn't be Sanctuary." "Did you see Randall?" Tempest asked. "He brought us the third, without whom we might not have fared so well. That little mage may have saved the day. He deserves your thanks. So does Jian. And so does Ishad." That brought them back to casualties. They wouldn't know for sure until they got everybody home. Not until they'd called the roll, praised the valiant, tended the injured, mourned the dead. Nico knew the drill. Fog of war, hard to dispel. Shock and numbness wearing away, leaving dead and wounded, maimed and ruined, and all the enduring questions. How well did we fight? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? How do we do better next time? And dealing with those for whom there would be no next time, and with their loved ones, every stricken soul. The hardest part in the days, weeks, and months to come was always reckoning the loss. Everyone must come to terms with sorrow, while fighters recalled what love is worth and what price there is for freedom. Until the next battle raged and men used the lessons they'd learned here to fight on other days. Too soon, Crit came riding up, voice sharp and anxious on his wall-eyed chestnut.
"Commander, Stratton's pretty badly hurt. We can't find Randall or Jihan."
"Get his shard," Tempest ordered, "and don't argue with me."
Strat. Nico felt the news like a slap across the face. Ishad was already there when he and Tempest found the wagon in which Stratton lay. Dusk was fading into deep blue night, torches flaring all across the valley. Stratton didn't move or speak, lying with closed eyes among others badly wounded, some moaning and groaning in the crowded wagon.
"Get back!"
Ishad hissed, eyes afloat and furious, bent over her mortal lover.
"I will see to him. Just go away. He'll be well in time for your next bloodbath. I don't need any help from you."
Nico couldn't see what wound she was treating, but her tone was preemptive. Tempest took Nico by the arm and led him away from the witch and Critias, whose face was so tired and concerned in the torchlight.
"If Ishad can't see him right," Tempest said, "then he's deader than the Dreamlord and the Wizard Boy. There'll be more to tend. This wasn't easy for anyone."
"What do you mean, deader?"
He needed to know. He didn't want to worry about Ascalon rearing up in his dreams or Shamshi sneaking into his rest place.
"Relax, Nico. You killed Shamshi. believe your body's knowledge. The wizard boy won't trouble us again. Trust me.
Trust your goddess. I've done this all before, too often.
As for Ascalon, without the bracelet called the Heart of Ascalon, the Dreamlord can't survive death or be revived. The dart's poison alone would have killed both of them eventually if we could have waited.
But Ascalon and Shamshi wouldn't wait, and how many more would have died if we had waited?
Wait! I couldn't wait any longer, Nico said, and let them keep picking us off and roast our horses and make everyone's life an endless nightmare. I believe you. I believe Harmony. I believe that Shamshi's dead and gone. But I remember what Abarsis said, that we shouldn't trust in what we saw. I need you to tell me that the Dreamlord's really dead as dead can be.
He is. I promise, Nico. When I get back from Lemuria, it will be as you want it. Both our enemies destroyed for all time.
Something in him took a breath, let down a notch. The Dream Lord and the Wizard Boy were truly vanquished. His commander had looked him in the eye and told him so. They walked their horses back up the slope. Somewhere to the west, lightning hopped from cloud to cloud, thunder chasing it inland.
"Storm coming," Nico said, eyeing the sky.
"There always is," the Riddler answered.
When they reached the top of the overlook, Tempest mounted his troce and said,
"Your goddess will want to see you when you have the time."
The Theban goddess was gone again.
"Commander, did her Thebans fare well?"
"Our Thebans," Tempest corrected. "We need to count heads and wounds and see what our damage is. Your goddess stayed there on the field with her fighters, with our fighters. She was there for them. She was there for you."
Nico got on the big black horse.
"Yes, she was there for me."
"And there for this horse as well, unscathed now despite so much skirmishing in close quarters." Nico knew Tempest had seen the axe slice the black horse in the chest. The black stud jigged along, settling in on the troce's right side as if he'd always been there. They had many wounded to tend, but they would manage.
"Life to you, Tempest, and everlasting glory,"
Nico said under his breath, thankful for all he'd learned and all he'd become on this warm summer night, with the deadliest battle of his life behind him.
"What?"
Tempest asked, shifting in his saddle.
"I said we have a lot to do before morning," Nico answered.
And the Riddler agreed. End of chapter 43. Chapter 44. All Fall Down. Stormbringer, the unbegotten, god of wind and wave, searches sanctuary with a hurricane eye for his froth daughter. North and east he blows inland, whirling and swirling his arms to rile the sea and scrape the land. In a pinwheel of storm he rolls past the jetty and swamps the lighthouse spit where a goddess once stood and grappled with a god in the sight of man. He is the father of all weather gods. No force on earth can withstand his might. His maelstrom arms spread out over sanctuary, chasing lesser gods and their thunder and lightning before him. He wails around the palace, affrighting priests and oligarchs, absorbing the wrath of storm gods into his more perfect storm. But his daughter isn't there. He rattles windows and batters doors across the city, where two young girls, one whore and one sorcerer's apprentice, hug each other and beg destiny to spare them and their beloved fighters of the sacred band. He spirals outward, lifting roofs in the maze and tents in the market, looking for his daughter in vain. He finds only an aging seeress, crying for her son, who is fighting for his life in an arcane war she cannot understand, while her brother holds her hand. His hurricane floods a dockside warehouse full of incendiaries, setting naphtha fire bottles afloat and sucking them out to sea. The hurricane flattens the gutted mage guild, stone from off of stone, and tarries there, looking all around sanctuary through one baleful eye, washing any taint of sorcery away. Up the White Foal River the tempest howls and whistles, smashing trees and throwing boulders in its indignation, looking for Jihan, leaving devastation in its wake. Inland roars the hurricane until it reaches the barracks of the sacred band, where it settles with its one great eye. Here Stormbringer spies the stepsons, the Theban fighters, and the third commando, attending to their own. In the face of such unflinching determination and unswerving devotion, the hurricane pauses and calms. Its ravings turn to mutters. Stormbringer looks and looks and looks there for Jihan, keening a sad song. His long arms wash every bit of blood and gore from an infernal battle plain as he goes, leaving only heather and sage and roses climbing its grassy slopes. At last he finds her, froth and water, sunk into the valley ground. Stormbringer rains down harder to wash his daughter to the river and out to sea where he can retrieve her on another day, another way. For something else is coming, with powers that not even an unbegotten can sway. Critias watches the storm's eye from the doorway of the barracks mess hall where their wounded lie. Above his head is blue sky, clouds tinged with pink and cream like a hole right through to heaven in the heart of this dispersing gale. Around the barracks yard are downed tree limbs and branches and a spattering of puddles. Time for Crit to report to the Riddler. He hardly has the heart for it. Stratton lingers close to death from a barbed arrow that hooked between his lowest ribs. His partner hasn't rallied, despite all Crit would allow Ishard to do, since last night at dusk. Now dusk is nearly here once more, and Strat still worsens. Wherever he looks, Critias sees Strat's big, broad face crinkled in a smile. The hurricane continues to abate in heaven, but not in Critias's heart, still spinning with anger and grief. They had fought as good a fight as men can, against killing odds. The Riddler comes to visit the wounded, stealth at his side when day is nearly done. Nico has a scabby scratch on his left thigh, a few bruises yellowing too soon on his arms, and that's all. lucky with all the fighting he'd done. Stepsons were whispering about a strange confrontation between Stealth and Shamshi. And maybe with something else. No one quite saw the fight between Nico and Sham, or between the Riddler and Ascalon, but many remember snippets as if from a dream. The Riddler shows neither wound nor bruise after battling Ascalon to the death. He is healed from whatever wounds he took. If only there hadn't been so many enemies, if only the band could have held formation, there'd be a different tale to tell today about dead and wounded. Even with the Third Commando reinforcing them, this fight took a horrendous toll. But things are as they are. "Crit," says Tempest, "here to hear who's dead and who's dying. How are they?" Behind Crit in the mess hall, the wounded and the dead lie with just enough room to step in between and tend the one or say farewell to the other. This mess hall, the largest single room in the barracks, is now a hospital and morgue. They had nowhere else big enough for everyone. The weather was too bad to leave bodies outside, and no one wanted to put bleeding men in the half-reconstructed stables. They didn't have enough beds and stalls for men and horses as it was.
"Just say it, straight out."
The Riddler wouldn't want it any other way.
"How are they? Or how's Strap?" "Strap may not make it. Ishad says she's done her best."
The words came out of Crit's mouth as if someone else were speaking. Crit wants a way out of this nightmare, into a world where Ishad is not a fact of life among the stepsons, where Stratton is happily cursing by Vashanka's third and hairiest ball or Enlil's prong. But he doesn't know how to make that happen.
"Our stepson, Epony, is critical. His intestines are dirty and torn, and he doesn't have enough uncorrupted flesh for us to sew him up. The Theban siren, Gorgias's right man, has fluid in his lungs from internal injuries. He was run over by those two chariot horses. He may not make it through the night. Artan has a spear wound in his right side and a slash wound across his kidney," Crit says flatly.
"What else?" asks the Riddler as Crit makes room for the commander and Stealth to come inside. Nico puts one hand on the lintel and doesn't say a word, surveying the 19 badly wounded and 12 dead covered with linen in ranks on the floor. "Damned hurricane, keeping the dead indoors. Crit needed the room those bodies were taking up." Before Crit can answer the commander, Nico asks, so low Crit leans forward to hear,
"Casualties? How many missing? Dead? Unfit for duty?"
Crit sighs and replies,
"Casualties, stepson, Theban and third commando. 61 wounded, missing and dead. Jehan and Randall and 6 others are still missing. As for the known dead, we lost 7 third commando fighters, 3 of our new hires, 1 veteran stepson, Epony's partner, Zetos, 1 Theban, Simon of Athens. Simeus has the list of the known dead. I'll add to it in the morning. We expect 14 to 17 dead all told. We have 22 walking wounded and 19 seriously injured. With those and the 12 burn cases we're still treating from the barracks fire, we're fairly busy. Simeus and Perseus, Gale and Cassandra are helping me here."
Nico raises his head at that, watching gray-haired Simmias and Perseus, the young poet, working on someone at the other end of the long room. Then he shifts and whispers in the Riddler's ear. Tempest listens, takes one step toward Crit and says, "Nico thinks you should ask the goddess for help with Strat."
"I'm not Theban," Crit rejoins, his skin crawling. "Stealth, don't you talk to me anymore."
Nicodemus is silhouetted in the doorway before a striated twilight of gilded mare's tails falling into a deep blue night. He takes his hand from the lintel.
"Fox, it's not up to me to tell a stepson sworn to Enlil that he should ask help from any but our tutelary god. But losing Strat..."
Nico spreads his arms and drops his hands to his sides. "I shouldn't have suggested it. You'd have to ask her. Pay her respect. I can't do it for you."
"And you agree with him, Commander? Just stroll up to this Harmony's altar and ask the Theban goddess to save our nearly dead?"
Crit had almost said, "to the altar of Nico's goddess." But he'd stopped himself in time. Tempest doesn't answer. Stealth rummages through Crit's soul with those disturbing eyes.
"Fox, we're one sacred band. I'd try it, if I was Strat's partner. If it were the commander lying there, I'd try whatever might save him, no matter how small the chance."
Nico shrugged. "I need to see Artin." And Stealth slid by him, weaving among the bodies on the floor until he found the young seer. He crouched down there, elbows on his knees. Artin raised his head. Tempest, unspeaking, mouth drawn tight, was watching Crit closely.
"You think this will work, Commander? You think I should? Are you suggesting that I ask a foreign goddess rather than Enlil for help?"
Tempest hadn't said that, only said that Nico thought Critias should petition Harmony for aid.
"I have no objection, Crit. We would ask her for you if we could.
Nico thinks it's you who must ask for Strat's life.
If you do ask the goddess, nothing about your status here will change. You'll still be ranked the same, respected the same. No one will think less of you. Enlil grants few wishes but for war."
The Riddler left him and went among the wounded, stopping to speak to each injured man in turn, bending down, touching this one's shoulder, that one's arm, until he got to Strat. And there he stayed, till Critias had to join him or look a fool.
"Whatever you need to do or need to say," said Tempest when Crit hunkered down beside him, "you'd best do it now. There's not much time."
Stratton's face was pale, his forehead shining with sweat. His eyelids looked bruised, eyes roaming under them. His breath was bubbly, too ragged.
"I knew we shouldn't come back here," Crit whispered.
He leaned down over his partner and murmured in Stratton's ear,
"Strat, just hold on. Please hold on."
Then to Tempest,
"Will you... can you stay with him till I return?"
Tempest nodded, putting the back of his hand against Stratton's brow. So now Crit has a last resort, one final chance to save the best man he's ever known. Out into the strange yellow light that the hurricane has left behind, and up the soggy hill Crit goes, jogging, to the altar of the foreign goddess. When he gets there, He's breathing hard. It's his heart breaking that is making his lungs ache. He knows what grief can do. You can't blame the necromant. She tried. Too much blood was lost inside Stratton, and too much lost on the ground. No time now for wondering how things might have been, or wondering why he had let Strat come here when he'd known better. He feels as if his body is another's as he kneels down before the white altar stones of this goddess from afar. He says quietly through clumsy lips,
I am Critias. I pay you respect and honor, goddess. Please save my sacred band partner, Stratton, the stepson. We fought for you and yours twice. He'll have laid down his life for you and yours if you can't help him.
And then he couldn't talk. His eyes were blurry. He balled his fists and stayed there on his knees, wondering if anything was going to happen. How long he should wait here while his partner is dying? After a dozen breaths, no goddess appears.
Nothing happens. Crit's never been one for prayer or celestial last resorts. He gets up and trudges down the hill. He tries to think what he'll do without Stratton, how his days will go. What is it like without the person who is always beside you? Why do you strive on all alone? He tries to think of the words he must say when Strat is on the pyre. How do you praise a life of so much valor, so much sacrifice, so much service? How many lives had Stratton saved in his career? How many fates had he changed for the better? When Crit reached the barracks mess hall, he couldn't go inside. There was no rain around him to hide the tracks of tears on his face. He stood beside the door, trying to compose himself, unball his fists, calm his racing heart. When he could, he pushed open the door. Tempest was still with Stratton. Nico was nowhere to be seen. And then he did see Nico, his back to Crit over in the corner, talking to someone. It was all Critias could do to walk calmly to the commander's side. He knelt down beside his partner. How is he?
Crit asked hopelessly. Miracles weren't for men like him and Strats. The Riddler said,
Look for yourself,
and rocked back on his haunches. Stratton's eyes were open.
He's dead, Crit thought. Died while I wasn't here. Died while I was wasting time up at that Theban altar. Fool Critias.
But then Strat's eyes focused, moved, and caught his own. There were footsteps behind him. Crit didn't look around. He didn't look at the Riddler. He couldn't. Strat shifted and his hand came out from under the blanket. Crit wished he hadn't put Stratton on this hard floor, but couldn't do differently for Stratton than for any other stepson. Though he'd wanted to put Strat in his own bed so badly. Crit took Strat's hand and whispered,
Life to you, Stratton, and everlasting glory.
He was sure he'd never be able to say that again, that Strat would never be able to hear him say it again. He almost couldn't speak the words. Strat's hand was cold and dry. After Strat died, Crit promised himself, he would never pair again. Ever.
Strat sucked a rattling breath and said,
"Critias! Riddler! What in—"
Strat looked over Crit's shoulder and said,
"Stealth?"
Strat struggled to sit up. Crit tried to push him back, but Tempest was quicker. "Stay down, Ace, for a bit," the commander said and got up.
"You need to rest. You lost a lot of blood."
Then he added, craning his neck,
"Thank you, Harmony."
And a woman's voice behind Crit said, "Critias asked me for help to save his partner. It was fitting to help a worthy soul who labored in our cause." Strat said,
"What?"
Strat's color was better. His eyes fixed on Crit and held.
"You did what? Where's his shard?" "His shard couldn't do this, not without letting you die first and then bringing you back to life."
Crit's voice was too sharp. Heads turned in the makeshift infirmary. Nevertheless, this had to be said. Now he whispered,
"We all remember Johnny. I knew you wouldn't want that, so I forbade it."
There, now they all knew. Crit let go of Strat's hand and turned, still on his knees, to face Harmony. The Theban goddess, armored in black, was standing beside Nico.
"I thank you, goddess, for Strat's sake and my own."
His words came out too thick, too choked. He hated deific intervention. Very unprofessional, begging help from heaven for a man in his position. But then, his position at this moment was one of being immensely relieved, on his knees before a foreign goddess. He started to rise. "Stay with your partner. Your thanks are clearly in your heart and in your soul," said the goddess in a voice like a breeze through the trees in summer. "And thank Stealth, called Nicodemus, and your commander for making such blessings possible." Crit smelled a meadow. He looked back at Strat and then to the goddess once again, but she was gone. Tempest said,
"I need to go hunting for Gian and Randall and the rest of the missing. Stratton, you stay there until Crit gives you leave to move."
Nico said, "I'll go with you." Stratton said,
"By Enlil's third and mightiest ball, what was all that about?"
And tried to sit up.
"So Critias must now tell Stratton about things Crit himself doesn't understand. About his shard, about Nico's goddess."
But before he began, he said crisply,
"You know, Strat, you never told me who gets the ghost horse if you die before me. Or anything else of yours, for that matter."
He couldn't let Strat see how shaken he had been, how terrified for his partner's life, and for his own life, if Stratton were no longer in it.
And Stratton, his sworn partner, whom he loved above all other men, said,
"A ghost horse? All that bay horse wants is to ride forever. Ride him as long as you're able, if you like, and then give him to the Riddler. He's a great horse for a fighter who's always in the thick of battle. Of all around you, man or horse, you can count on him never to let you down."
Stratton's voice dwindles to a whisper, exhausted, shaky.
"All I own is yours, like my life."
Then Strat's expression holds him tight, desperately, as the looks of men retreating from death's door sometimes can. Insisting on strength,
hungry for days.
Grabbing a future he can't let slip away. There in that mess hall, among the hurt and dying, Stratton's face says so much more about loyalty and respect and honor, about life and love of partner and commitment greater than death can break. Things that can't be said aloud between these two, so senior, so cold, so bold, but that both men understand. The stepson Epony joined his dead partner at moonrise. That made 13 dead, 18 seriously wounded, 8 missing. Such adding and subtracting made Karen's heart sore. Epony's wounds, sustained in the campaign against Ascalon, brought such agony to the hardened stepson that he moaned and cried fearfully before he died. To Karen, his death seemed a blessing. Blessings come in all colors, all sizes, and all shapes. Siren, a Theban hero who had fought beside Gorgias for 9 years, died soon after. Run over by a pair of chariot horses he swore he never saw coming. No other Theban remembers the chariot wreck, either. Siren didn't even remember being trampled. It's the sort of thing a man remembers, whether he is watching runaways come on or running from pounding hooves. 14 dead, 17 badly wounded now. Karen must convince his son, Lysis, blessed of harmony, to leave Artan's side for a while. Thanks must be given to the goddess. Prayers must be said. So Karen walks through the softly moaning wounded and the silent dead to where his son sits beside his injured partner. It would have been better if Lysis had a Theban partner, but the Riddler has done this. This sacred band fights differently, in arcane combat against enemies who are beyond the ken of Thebans. Or were, until Harmony had appeared to them on the first Chironian battle plane. And then salvation had come with a flight into a shimmer and a glimmer and a maelstrom and a citadel. And out again to this unnatural sanctuary. Careful not to kick or bump the wounded on either side, Karen knelt down beside his son. Lysis said, "Father, Artan saved me, you know. Came riding up, telling me if I rode another step I'd die right then, and took a sword cut meant for me." "You can't know that," Karen objected and then regretted it. Lysis was the blessed one, and his partner so severely wounded, so pale, so wan, was a seer, men said. "But perhaps you're right. Artan, thank you for saving my son," he said gravely, while his heart said that only the goddess deserved his thanks. Artan peered up at him as if from another world and said, "Fighters find their way to heaven. Sanctuary lies on the border between mortality and immortality. I see it. You must see it now, Thebans." His voice was scratchy, thin. If Artan had been a woman, Karen would be sure he was hearing an oracle pronounce a prophecy. "You're not going to die of this," Lysis said determinedly to Artan. "You're not," Stell said. "Come, Lysis," said Karen, "let your partner rest. You have horses to treat in the stables. Sink was asking for you. Artan, I will pray for you, Lysis promised as he arose and followed his father to the door. We all will. Critias, leaning in the doorway, made way, acknowledging them with a wave of his hand and a haunted look as they went by. When they were alone, Charon said, Our goddess is here with us. Don't burden her with the lives of these unbelievers. We need all the help we can get. We have our own wounded and dead for the pyres. Siren died tonight. Gorgias will be bereft. You pray for them, and thank her that you have only these few cuts and bruises. Lysis wouldn't meet Charon's eyes as they headed to the stables to see Sink.
Our goddess is with us.
Men whispered that she'd saved the stepson, Stratton. Some wondered how this could be if she hadn't saved her own Simon of Athens, who died next to the ghost of Theagenes, after they found their brothers from the sacred band of Thebes on the second Chironian battle plain. And now Siren, too, was dead. Charon was neither a vengeful man nor a stingy one, but blessings from a goddess are precious. He needs all her help to shepherd his own through this impious land. He had been afraid, when he first saw Theagenes, that the Theban dead would avenge themselves upon the 46 of his, who'd been led away by the Riddler. But Theagenes himself had arranged for their salvation, and the goddess had agreed. And now here they are, the remaining 42 of the Theban sacred band, at Harmony's bidding, led by a warrior philosopher of obscure nature, whose partner is a warrior monk and favored of Harmony. Blessed be Harmony. For the Thebans had lost as few as any squadron in the battle. Charon watches his son out of the corner of his eye in the moonlight. None of this numinosity bothers Lysis, whom the goddess loves. Charon is proud of his son, but he is homesick tonight for the 7 gates of Thebes and a world he'll never see again. Anyone would be, after fighting twice on the Chironian plain. Or was it only that Charon was not young, not adaptable, not like his son who took everything in stride? When they found Sink in the east inline barn, Corus was there with him. Life to you, Corus, and everlasting glory, Lysis called out before they reached the other two, who were leaning together over a half-door. And to you, Sink? Yes, my son is fitting in among these fighters. Stepson greetings rang out to both of them in the quiet stable where horses munched their evening meals contentedly, proving all was well on earth and in heaven for one more night. "Come here and look at these two mares, Lysis," called Sink, who had cheesecloth swathing his right arm above the elbow and a long gash on his right cheek. When they got there, Corus said, "Lysis, Sink says if we break them to saddle, we can ride them." He pointed toward one stall and then the next. "I want this one. You take the other." "They belong to the band, not to you," Sink warned and looked slyly at Charon. "You two need to remember that. We lost our other sables. These are the Ascalonians that pulled the Dreamlord's chariot in battle."
"So won't the Riddler kill them?" asked Lysis. "Since they were bred by Ascalon?"
"We don't kill horses," said Sink sternly. "We breed them. Ascalon is dead. It's not these horses' fault whose barn they were born into. Corus, you'll be responsible for the mare you like. Lysis, you'll care for the other.
Lysis ran to Corus, and the two young fighters put their heads together. Sink came over to Karen.
Your son has a talent for horse-breaking. When you see what he does with this filly, you'll be proud.
I am already proud. Karen and Sink watched the youths. Corus showed not a single scratch from battle. Karen's son had war wounds sewn and dressed on his left leg and along his right side.
"Is there something else you want to say, Karen?" Sink asked.
Sink's third commando had been called by the Riddler to join the fight, and nearly 300 of them had come from far Lemuria. They'd lost the most fighters of any unit in the battle, yet Sink seemed unfazed.
"Lysis and I are going up to the altars to pray for the wounded and the dead. You have many of both. Can we say prayers for yours?"
The dark horse tamer, rangy and angular, leaned back against a stall wall and said,
"If you wish, but listen first. You're new to this cohort. Let me tell you what it means to me. It's an honor to fight where the Riddler fights. I always know I'm on the right side, doing more than other men can do. Sometimes you think it's more than you can do. Sometimes it is. He knows us, what we all are and what we all do. He puts us where we matter. We say, it's better to die for something than for nothing at all. If you don't believe in the commander yet, believe in that. You'll fight battles others only dream of. Find honor and glory most profound, not for some ruler or town or city, but for all men. The Riddler says you make the world better one battle at a time. There is no harder life. There is no better one for men with a certain bent of mind and body, heart and soul."
"I understand," said Karen.
The horse tamer, seeing that Karen had some dressed gashes on his right side, clapped him on his left arm, smiling crookedly around the slice on his face.
"You've brought new blood we're all going to be proud to call stepsons in this greater sacred band. Give thanks for that when you're at your altar."
And Sink floated away, another hero among the many collected here, to help the youths and teach them what he could. When Karen and Lysis finally got to the altar of harmony, the best of his Thebans were all there, clustered on their goddess's consecrated ground. Gorgias, newly bereft, dark of skin and hair, with his craggy face remade by war. Aegis, swarthy and bearded, and Archias, his blonde, square-faced partner. Simmias, their gray-bearded intellectual, and Perses, the lithe young poet with his dark curls. In the moonlight, bandages on each man seemed to glow. Gorgias was sitting cross-legged, playing a song to the goddess on his flute. All of these would live to fight on other days. Karen, with his son by his side, felt truly grateful. In the miasmic battle, when he had found Theagenes and the fated sacred band of Thebes' 254 doomed fighters, all he could think was how terrible it was that these would fight again and meet their fate again without hope of reprieve. But now he saw all of his alive and well, with offerings of oil and bread and wine to give their goddess, while the flute played softly and insects kept the time, and he knew better. He knew that a great